Seahawks home against Cleveland. And in Northwoods League baseball, the Kenosha Kingfish lost to the Madison Mallards 7-5 in 10 innings yesterday. That game was in Madison. The two teams play again tonight at Simmons Field. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service for this Monday, June 11th. Cloudy and seasonal, a high of 70 inland, cooler near Lake Michigan. Right now, wind from the east northeast at 14, 59 degrees in Racine. It is 58 in Kenosha. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. Coming up on 8:11, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for the morning show comes from the Carthage College Office of Continuing Studies, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. Convenient evening and summer courses are designed for the working adult. More information at carthage.edu/grad. Support also comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2018, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show. I'm Gregory Berg. And we welcome you to the Monday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I am so excited about today's program and the interview that you are about to hear, because we're going to be exploring something that is of supreme importance in the lives of so many young people, both here and across the country. We're going to be talking about foster care and the enormous difference that loving foster parents can make in the lives of children who, for one reason or another, find themselves displaced out of what would normally be their own home, or for whatever reason find themselves in need of a loving, safe place to live and grow. And we have with us today in our studios, first of all, Marie Hargrove from the Racine County Human Services Department. She is the foster care recruitment and retention specialist. So she is one of the persons who is charged with trying to secure high-quality foster parents for the young people of Racine County. And she has with her two foster parents who have made a very big difference in the lives of some very special children, Emily Mullins and Stacy Scott. And we want to welcome all three of you to the morning show.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
We're so glad to have you here. We really, really are. So, Marie Hargrove, I want us to begin with you and have you sort of help us understand sort of the whole world of foster care, of sort of how it works and the mechanism by which, for instance, children are matched up with foster parents. First of all, let's just begin with the most basic sort of definition. What are we talking about when we're talking about a foster parent?
When we're talking about a foster parent, we're talking about people who are licensed to bring children into their home who have been displaced for various reasons. Sometimes it's because of abuse and neglect. Sometimes it's because they have medical needs that their parents can't necessarily handle. Sometimes it's because their parents have been incarcerated and they don't have other family members who are available to take them in. So we have licensed people that have said, yes, we will allow these children to come into our home in the event that they are reunified with their parents in the end. So we have them for that period of time.
Right. Typically, how does such a child become aware of you or connected? How do you become aware of a child who finds themselves in that situation? What is the mechanism by which these connections get made?
Most of the calls come from through our access line, where people who have maybe neighbors or other family members that have noticed that the parents aren't able to take care of the children or aren't providing the care that is needed, they'll make a call to that access line, and then It'll go to our initial assessors. They will assess whether it's an immediate and present danger and something that they need to go out to investigate right away, or if it's something that they have a little bit of time to kind of monitor to see what types of situations we need to and how fast we need to act on those situations.
Right.
So if they go in and it's an emergency situation where they need to be taken right away and there isn't an option for a safety plan to be worked out in the home, then they would come into foster care and we would search for placements for them.
So this amounts to probably social workers.
Absolutely.
Going into the home and seeing for themselves just what is the situation, how serious is it, and what needs to be done.
Yes.
I'm just curious. I don't think you're involved in that particular phase of this or not directly.
Not directly.
Right. When that happens, do you, in a sense, have the force of law behind you? I mean, when a social worker knocks on the door, do they need to answer? Do they need to allow you in?
Yeah, there are times when law enforcement is with the initial assessors that goes. It just depends on what the situation is and how much of danger they feel that they may encounter when they get there.
Right. So at any rate, the situation, whatever it is assessed. And at that point, at least an initial
assessment
is mm-hmm. made that this child or these young children need to be removed from this home, mm-hmm. or perhaps there is a way to change the situation and leave them there. Is the preference typically to leave the children there if possible?
Yes, that's one of the first things that we try to do. And then in the case that they are left in the home, then there's a worker that's assigned to go more regularly to the home to just check out the situation and make sure that the children are still safe.
Right. But in those situations, those unhappy situations when a child should not be allowed to remain in the home, then at this point they need to be taken someplace. And typically what happens in those situations?
Typically what happens is if we've already been notified as foster care workers that there's a potential for a placement. If we are able to find a placement before they actually detain the children from the home, they could go from their home right to the foster home. But in the case that we are still working on finding a placement, then oftentimes they end up in our offices while we're making those calls to get a place for them to go.
Right. So, for instance, in Racine County right now, and you deal with all of Racine County?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So not just the city of Racine.
No. But the county. Burlington, Union Grove as well.
Right. Mm-hmm. At least generally speaking, what kind of numbers are we talking about in terms of the number of children in Racine County mm-hmm. that are in foster care at the moment?
350 children are in care right now. We have 92 in care as of earlier this month who are placed out of county. But now we just learned yesterday that some of those children have been returned back to the county. So there's 87 that are out of county. So 350 total, 87 are out of county.
So if you don't have sufficient number of foster parents here, sometimes children need to be, in a sense, sent elsewhere. And I should think in a lot of ways that's not what you want to see happen. That's even more disruptive for them.
Right. That increases the amount of trauma that the child has on top of already being moved from their home. So if they're taken out of county, then they're removed from their schools. They leave their pets and things at home. They're removed from their siblings. And then they have to go into a county where they know no one. So we try and keep them in county as often as we can.
Right. And as foster care recruitment and retention specialist, you're one of the people charged with trying to sort of swell the ranks of qualified and high quality foster parents.
Absolutely.
So more of these children can stay put. Mm-hmm. Typically, when a child is matched up with a foster parent, for what sort of length of time is that done? Or when that begins, is it kind of with a sense of in perpetuity mm-hmm. for as long as it needs to be?
Yeah, it's usually, it's basically case by case. So depending on how well the parent is working with their reunification plan that they have set up with the case managers, if at that time, you know, they're not incarcerated, it could be a couple of weeks, it could be 6 months, could be up to a year. But then there are those cases that are a little more intense, and they could be a couple of years or so. Or it could be that the parental rights are terminated and they don't go back to their homes. They end up continuing to be in foster care, or sometimes our foster parents then end up adopting the children.
Right. So it's really hard to say. And I suppose that's part of one of the challenges of all of this is that when a foster parent takes a child into their home, in a sense, you don't exactly know what you're signing on for.
Right, right. They learn more and more as they continue to work with the case managers. The case managers tend to let them know what's going on with the parents, if they're making the visits, if they're working the plan. And sometimes they can give them, okay, it may be, you know, in a couple of months, we may be looking to do unsupervised visits as opposed to supervised visits. And then once the unsupervised visits are going well and they feel that the child would be safe in the parent's home, then, you know, they could say, you know, a month from now, we're going to move them. So they kind of have an idea of what the plan is. And as long as the parents are working the plan, they get a good sense of how long the child is going to be there.
Right. For those of you just joining us, we're talking about foster care on today's morning show, and we're right now hearing the voice of Marie Hargrove, who is Foster Care Recruitment and Retention Specialist for the Racine County Human Services Department. And with us in the studio also today, two foster parents, whom we're going to be hearing from very shortly, Stacy Scott and Emily Mullins, who can speak in a first-person way about what it is like to be a foster parent. Marie Hargrove, typically, who signs up to be a foster parent? I mean, and what typically motivates somebody to want to do that?
Most of the people that we've talked to during our interviews with foster parents are people who feel that they're very passionate about children, and a lot of them see stories or hear stories and it kind of pulls at their heartstrings, or it's been something that their parents may have done. So it's kind of a cycle that they've gone through. We have foster parents who, you know, we can start at age 21. We actually have foster parents who are up to age 80. So it's just a wide gamut of age ranges that we have. As long as they are 21, they can meet the basic financial stability income without having to depend on foster care income, and they can pass the criminal background and safety checks of the home, they're eligible.
Hmm. Let's talk finances for a moment. So somebody is compensated when they are a foster parent. Mm-hmm. Can you just give us a little information about how that's calculated?
Sure. It's calculated based on basic needs and the age of the child. So the current foster rate, I believe, is a little over $350, just depending on, again, the age of the child and the situation. And if that is the base rate, they would get that base rate for the child based on the child's age. There is also a supplemental rate if the child has medical needs or has more behavioral aspects that they need attention to, then that supplemental rate is added on to that base rate. So, you know, it just varies.
Right. But you said something very interesting ahead of that, which is something about how you assess a potential foster parent's sort of financial well-being. Mm-hmm. In other words, you want to avoid situations in which a potential foster parent might be tempted to do this
for
the financial windfall, in a sense, that it might represent. That's not what this is about.
That's not what this is about.
And of course, it's so important to think about things like background checks. Of course, this is something you don't want a child trading one unfortunate situation for another. Can you just give us a sense of just how stringent your background check is and the kind of things that are explored and the means by which those matters are explored?
Mm-hmm. We actually do a Department of Justice background check, criminal background check, and we also do the national and state sex offender check as well. So we have to make sure that if we are moving kids from homes, that they aren't going into homes that are just as unsafe as their regular home. So we follow guidelines based on our DCF 56, which is Department of Children and Family 56 guidelines. And so if they meet those requirements and there are no borrowable offenses on their criminal record, then they can be eligible to take foster care children.
And then beyond all of that, what do you look for in a foster parent? I mean, assuming that all of these very sort of basic baseline requirements are there, then otherwise, what are the kinds of things that you look for? Or do you look for quite a wide array of people?
Wide array of people. We do what we call safe interview checks, and that's not only interviewing their, it's also, also including their psychological sense. So we want, you know, so we're not saying that the foster parents have to be perfect. We want foster parents also who have come from a background and overcame some of the situations that the kids are having right now. So let's say there was some abuse in the home. We're not saying that the foster parents can't be from a home that came that had abuse in it. We want that foster parents to be able to be compassionate and empathetic with that child so that they can share experiences and know how to deal with them and help them to overcome whatever challenges they are having.
Right. So in other words, you're not looking for necessarily, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Cleaver from Leave It to Beaver.
Right.
You are looking for people who have a genuine interest in this, and in some cases, even when someone has experienced difficulty in their own lives, that can be a factor that might make them a very effective foster parent.
Absolutely.
Especially for certain children.
Absolutely.
Fascinating. I want to be sure to give you time, and we'll return to this at the end, to talk about this Bring Them Home campaign, which is underway right now.
Right.
Explain what this is.
We launched this Bring Them Home campaign in April of this year. What it is, it's specifically targeted towards the kids who are out of county. We want to bring them home back to Racine County. So as I said a little bit earlier, when we started the campaign, we had 92 foster kids out of county. Now we have 87, which we're very proud of. And so we want to open new homes that will allow us to have space for these children who are out of county to come back into county. What that also does is it helps the child to be able to work the reunification plan with their parents. So if they're out of county, they may only get to see their parents once a month. But if they're in county, they may get to see their parents twice a month or twice a week and be able to rebuild that relationship and be able to go home sooner than later.
I never even thought about that. That just the logistics of getting biological parents and their children physically together becomes so much more difficult when we're talking about them being someplace else. And these 80 some young people who right now are out of county. Generally speaking, at least, where are they? Are we talking at least about adjacent counties or not necessarily?
We have up as far as Green Bay.
Wow.
Yeah. So they're kind of spread out. Some of them are in like Wausau, Neenah, all those different counties as well.
Interesting.
Just all over.
Is Racine County sort of... Does it have exceptionally high numbers in terms of number of foster children? Do you know anything about that?
I only know that we have 350. I know that this is a national little epidemic, I guess I would call it right now, where there is so many children in foster care, but there are so few homes, even with Racine County. We've lost some of the homes that we've had because people have either aged, the foster parents have gotten up in age and decided that they wanted to, you know, kind of do other things with their lives, or they've been foster parents for a long time. They've adopted a number of children. and they just don't have the space anymore. So they're still passionate about the kids, but they just don't have the space. Some of them have already moved once, can't move again right. to get more space. So it just depends. And the state and the nation are, you know, doing a lot and to try and help us to get more homes open for kids to go be able to stay home and have a foster home that they can go to in the meantime.
Right. And so one of the reasons we're having this conversation today is to hear from two foster parents who've chosen to do this and are glad that they have. So Emily Mullins and Stacy Scott are both foster parents joining us here, and we welcome you to the morning show. I would love to hear from each of you a little bit about what prompted you yourself to want to do this, to become a foster parent. Who feels like starting? And they're looking politely at one another, okay? All right, we'll start with Emily Mullins.
Sure, I'll go ahead and start. I think if I really look back on my life in general, it's just kind of always something in my heart that I always felt, I won't say wanted to do. Certainly it isn't anything anyone, you know, wants to do. It is a need to do. But I always just, I think it was just always something in our home. We moved a lot. I was always a new kid. It wasn't military. I think at least in the military, you're moving from base to base. There's other kids in that situation. We were just in a situation where my dad traveled a lot with his job. Mom wanted the family to be together. We moved a lot together. Like six kindergartens in 1 year kind of moves.
Okay? Wow.
So I think I know what it's like to be displaced on a regular basis. And I never want a child to have that lonely feeling if they don't need to. If they can have a smile and somebody to say, hey, you're home here, your family here. That's just something we always just felt was a call, you know, for our home and our family.
Right. You mentioned before we went on the air that you're married, so you and your husband together are
yes.
foster parents.
Yes.
Was this something that the two of you sat down and talked about together? That at some point you wanted to do?
No, actually, we kind of came to foster care by way of foster children. We were recruited by children that were in a foster home, and they were stepping down from foster care, and the children that we knew that they had in foster care were going to be displaced yet again. And we actually sat down as a whole family, not just my husband and I, but all three of our children as well. And the discussion was the whole family. And we said, hey, you know, we have an opportunity to allow these kids to stay in a community for longer, to be somewhere and with people they're familiar with. What do you think? And I thought I might have to get my flow charts and everything out and convince everybody this was something we needed to do. And my kids looked at each other and looked at me and said, well, can we just vote? And I said, well, okay, but then we'll discuss it more.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
We'll talk about it more. And I said, let's vote. And everybody said, we take the kids. You know, that's just what we do. And not for a minute have we ever regretted,
wow.
you know, what we do.
Wow.
We love it.
So these foster children, how many are we talking about?
We just took our 21st child this week.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. When you started, how many were we talking about?
Two. We took two children to start.
So with three that were already in the home.
Yes,
so.
We went to a family of five. So at
wow.
that point,
and just
yes.
like that. And as you yeah. said, no regrets whatsoever. We'll
nope.
talk more about specifics with your story in just a little bit. Stacy Scott is also with us. Now, Stacy, my understanding is that you're actually a single foster parent.
Yes, that is
so
correct.
Slightly different situation. How does your story compare with Emily in terms of how you first became interested in doing this?
Well, unlike Emily, I hadn't been thinking this was something I had wanted to do. It kind of happened over a couple of weeks. A few things were happening in the world, something that I had seen on television that kind of seems like it just broke my heart. One of the instances was I woke up in the middle of the morning, TV had been left on, and there was a show. And the show started with a man being rushed into the emergency room. And it kind of took us how he got to that place. Well, he had tried to commit suicide. And he had take us back to his childhood, him and his sister and a mom. And he was in a home where his mom preferred her boyfriend over
her children. Mm. So there was a lot of abuse in the home from that boyfriend to the children. It was a very sad movie. And I just remember bawling my eyes out thinking, who is going to protect these children? There are so many children like this. Who is going to protect them? Another instance, I was reading, I believe it was a Newsweek, and there was a earthquake over in Haiti, and so many children were now orphans because of the earthquake, this major earthquake that happened years ago.
Right.
The article talked about a truck going through the streets, and in their language saying food and water. So you had these children going to those trucks, but then they were being sold into sex slavery. And again, it's like, oh my God, who is going to protect these children? Who is out there? And again, I'm crying, and I'm thinking, well, I'm just one person. I'm a single mom. What can I do? And I'm like, well, that's one person. That's one bed that I felt like I could give to protect a child. So that's kind of how I came into it. My son was 6 at the time. And we did have a little bit of a talk, but I don't think he really understood what was about to take place. So that prompted me into looking into then fostering, because I felt like I was one person that could do something for at least one child.
Wow.
Yes.
And it's great that you've done that. What are your recollections about that first encounter with, I assume you began this right here in Racine County, is that right?
Yes.
So your first connection with Racine County Human Services, what was that like the first time you had to sort of talk with them or be interviewed by them to get the process going?
For me, there was an excitement because I felt like, oh, I'm going to be one of those people that'll make a difference, that'll, you know, be able to keep someone safe. And so it was a very pleasant experience for me going through the trainings. I have to say this, my parents were foster parents. And even though I grew up in a home with foster children, that was never something in my mind to do as I got to be an adult. So when I got to go to the trainings, it let me see things through another side, because I grew up in a home with foster children. So it was a wonderful experience to begin to see how, coming from the other side as a parent, learning how to deal and knowing now, okay, this is what my parents were going through. Oh, this is what they were experiencing, kind of thing. So I had a wonderful experience.
Because I suppose you could potentially live in a home as a child and not really know anything about what it means to be a foster parent.
Yes.
Or you would know certain things about it, but certainly not the full story. How about you, Emily, your first encounter with, I mean, to kind of get this ball rolling?
Well, I think at first it kind of can seem overwhelming and a little scary. You think, oh, you know, paperwork and background checks and interviews and my home has to be inspected. And, you know, again, we have 3 children in the home as it was. We were lucky to, you know, get the dishwasher filled and emptied once a week, let alone have someone come in and inspect that kind of thing. So it can feel a little daunting in the very beginning. And I have to say, the immediate peace you get and just kind of realization that they're there to help you through it. It's not a, I'm coming in, I'm expecting, and you don't do this right or you don't do that right. There was a, no, we're going to all work together for the benefit of these kids to get you ready and prepared and knowledgeable and help you with, you know, this is what you need to do or there. We've had just nothing but wonderful experiences. The trainings, all of them, I come away going, wow, I didn't know that. This was great. And you meet other foster parents and other families, and you hear what they're going through, and you kind of become a little family, you know, yourself with all those involved. And over years, it's just so interesting to hear more and more about the process as you go along, too.
Interesting. I'm very anxious to hear a lot more about the training, but first I want to hear a little more about this inspection thing, which is probably one of the first things that happened. Marie, do you want to get us started in terms of what that inspection is all about? What kinds of things are being looked for in the inspection?
Sure. Like I said, it's mostly a safety inspection. And one of the things that we look at is making sure that there's enough space for you to have an additional child in your home. Like you said, Emily had 3, like Emily was saying, she had 3 children already in her home. And we want to make sure that the foster child that comes in also has adequate space. So not, and then, you know, we look at the bedroom space, but we also look at, is there an area outside where there's more recreation, or are they near a park where they can go and play? So just making sure of those kinds of things. If there's stairs, making sure that there's a handrail, making sure that they have a fire extinguisher, smoke detectors, carbon monoxide, those kinds of things, and just checking to make sure there's no, making sure that there's outlets in the plugs in the outlets, and those are kinds of things that we're looking at.
So
no present dangers that would a foster child might have. So,
right. So the inspection was a little intimidating, but a fairly painless experience from the sounds of it.
Right, correct. So. And those things don't have to be in place when we go to the home at that first visit. They have until they're done with their licensing process, and we do that final inspection to make sure that things are ready to go.
Great. Let's find out a little bit about what the training process was like. And Marie, feel free to chime in as you like, but I would love to hear from Emily and Stacy how extensive the training period was and what was especially helpful to you.
I did my training, so I've been a foster parent for about 8 years now. So it's been a while, but if I can remember, I know I went on Saturdays, and I'm not sure if it was 6 or 7 weeks, maybe 4 to 5 hours a Saturday.
Right.
They do offer different trainings. So some are during the week, some are on the weekends. For me, it worked best because I do work as well outside the home. So Saturdays worked great. I went every Saturday. We had a week off for the 4th of July. And it was wonderful because you were with like-minded people. You could bounce questions off, any fears, you know, things that you may not have thought of. I think the trainings were excellent because it took you in depth of so many different types of trauma that child may have coming into your home to help prepare you.
Emily, what are your recollections of the training process? And how long have you been a foster parent?
We've been a foster parent for about 5 years now.
Okay.
And we had similar training. I think we did Saturdays. We did in the winter, so we had days off when the weather was, you know, bad that we would, you know, do it a different time. But I remember we had our choice of weekdays in the evening, once a week, twice a week. There were many options that we could choose from. I think the thing that I came away from the training most, and I know my husband as well, was the information and the preparation you got in regards to the families. Because when you take a child into your home, you're not always just dealing with that child. You're also working with their family because our goal is reunification. So I think that coming away from the training with the information on the bio parents and how our involvement with visitation and helping with the reunification and the encouragement of reunification, and yet the boundaries that could be set as well with families was very helpful to us, is to understand that the child isn't coming into your home and their former life is a closed door. That's a revolving door, and it's a revolving door we hope is a reverse door, that they're eventually going home to family. And I think that was a huge thing coming in, is the training and the just opening our eyes to what foster care is as opposed to adoption. And I thought that was very helpful, not just to us, but I noticed a lot of the families that we were with as well. Just it just kind of was a light bulb moment for all of us is to realize, you know.
Right. Just helps you deal with the different issues that a child may have, like Stacy said, as they're coming in, and how to cope, and also to provide some resources for additional assistance if you need it to be able to handle the children that are coming in.
Right. And then this really touches on something important, too, which is that when you are choosing to become a foster parent, you are signing up for something that emotionally is very tricky, because you're emotionally opening up your heart to a child that needs you, but in a sense you're not doing it in this sort of full way, which would in mean them becoming your own child. It's something else. It's kind of an interesting middle ground. And it sounds, especially Emily, like that was something you had to kind of learn through the training process about what this emotionally means to be a foster parent.
We actually went in as an adoptive resource. The children that we were getting that were in foster care, we went in as an adoptive resource. So our journey through foster care took a little bit longer to understand it differently, because we went in with the mindset that these kids were going to be adopted by us. You go through that same process with the foster to adopt kind of situation. So that was a little bit different. So like you said, as the years have gone on and we've become a more of a traditional general foster mm-hmm. home, it's been mm-hmm. a little bit different. So I think there was a little bit of that difference too, you know, when we went in. But
interesting.
It is an interesting it's an interesting road that it's an interesting journey. Right. It really is.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we try and, you know, specifically say that we're the goal is reunification. We kind mm-hmm. even in training, we start, you know, preaching that message at that time. It's reunification. And, you know, even though it still gets to be hard because you've also built this relationship with the kids that are in your care, we try and, you know, and we try and just let them know that this is what the plan is. And I think as long as we keep the foster parents aware of what the plan is and what the status of the plan is and the parent working towards reunification, they can better have a sense of preparation for when that time comes that the child may be removed from the home.
For those of you just joining us, we're talking about foster care in Racine County today with Marie Hargrove, who is Foster Care Recruitment and Retention Specialist for Racine County Human Services. And we have with us two women who have chosen to be foster parents, Emily Mullins and Stacy Scott, here to share their own personal stories as well. Marie, how do specific children get matched with specific foster parents? Typically, what is that process like?
During the licensing process, the foster parents can tell us what age groups they want, what gender they want, what level of care they're willing to accept into their home. So some just take, you know, the general no medical needs, no drastic trauma in their lives that they would have to deal with. Or they can say, I will take those higher level children. So when you're licensed as a foster parent, generally you come in and are licensed as a level two foster parent, which takes those general children with minimal behaviors. But then we also have a group of foster parents who are level three, which is called a moderate treatment level. So they take those more behavioral or medical needy children into their home and are prepared and have done the additional training to be licensed at that level. So when they're licensed for general foster care, they do 36 hours of foundations training, and then they do 10 hours. If it's a couple, they do 10 hours each per year for their ongoing training. With the level three foster parents, they would do the initial foundations training, and then they have to do an additional 18 hours of ongoing training a year just to be relicensed at that same level.
Right. So for each of you, what did you sign on for in terms of, you know, what kind of children were you interested in taking into your homes? What kinds of things did you think about in sort of making that determination?
For me, I originally went with, I believe, 0 to 3 male, one child. That's how I went into it. After my first placement, I believe it was a couple days later when the social worker came to check in on me, I found out my little guy had a brother that was placed in another home. Well, of course, that just broke my heart. And I'm like, bring that baby over here. So I went from being licensed for one child to two children. Okay, and then there was a time when I'm open up to boys. Well, I had two brothers and found out there was a sister that was in another home. And it's like, what? Bring that baby over here. So then I had two boys and a little girl. So it's, for me, it morphed. Me thinking, oh, I'm a single mom. I work full time out of the home. I could only do one, you know, handle one child. But you get that one child in there. And I used to tell my parents, your motto should be, there's always room for one more. That became my motto. There's always room for one more. We can, you know, change things around a little bit, get another bed. I actually went to a larger car to kind of make it work because one of my things was I didn't like to see sibling groups split. So if I could, I would definitely rearrange my home to accommodate the siblings.
Wow. So, yes. What kind of age range are we talking about with these three siblings you took into your home?
Oh, let's see. There was, she was 3 months and a 2-year-old, and then the little brother was 4.
Okay. Wow.
Yes.
I can see, and just from the little I know you, I can understand how that would be really important for you. Emily, for you, your initial entrance into this whole world was because of these young children that you already knew. I don't know if you've told us how you even knew them. Did you know them through school or church?
We knew them through another family in our community that was fostering them. And so that's how we knew the children. And so we went in as a child-specific, so they call it. We were actually licensed for these two little girls. So we were licensed for two girls to start with. And the next time we morphed rather largely and went 0 to 18, boy, girl, whatever it needs to be, and we're currently licensed for three in the home we're in now. But as Stacy said, it just kind of becomes a new mindset. 2 years ago, we moved. We wanted to make sure we had 4 to 5 bedrooms in the home because we may have more children. This last year, we got a new vehicle, and nope, we need that third row still. We're still in minivan mode. We're still in minivan mode, you know. And my youngest bio child is 17. Mm. And so, you know, it's a very big change when, you know, the kids get older, where it's like, oh, you're going to change over to that SUV or a nice little sedan. It's like, no, I need that third row seat. Right. It's built-in car seats kind of thing, right. You know. So it just kind of becomes a part of everything you do. You start to think, you know, what could potentially, you know, your basement becomes filled with 0 to 3 girls'
Being
clothing,
clothes. Yes.
Summer clothes, winter clothes, boys' clothes, you know, all the different things that you may need when a child comes into your home.
Right. I'm curious to know about your other children. And Stacy, you have a child of your own, right?
Yes, I have a son, Caleb, who is 12 years old right now.
Okay.
Yes.
And you've just mentioned that you have three of your own, so to speak. It's always a little awkward to know exactly how to even refer to your own children and your foster children. But at any rate, what has this experience been like for them? Stacy, let's start with you and your son, who kind of signed on for this in the beginning, probably having little or no understanding of what this was going to be. What's it been like for him?
I think it's like, for Caleb, it's kind of like having any siblings. So he was the only child for a little while. And so it was great. You have a little brother you can play with, or you have a sister now. But then there are those times where they agitate each other and, oh, he's so annoying. And we deal with it like any siblings. One of the things that I grew up with my parents fostering, as well as I try to instill in our home, we never put a divider between foster children and bio children. They were always growing up. They got the same things as us. Mm-hmm. We went shopping, they went shopping, vacations, and that's how it is in my home. When Caleb and I, we have children, these are our brothers, sisters, so these are my children, and that's how I introduce them. Only once I had a little guy, I picked him up from school, and he's like, can you tell him you're my babysitter? And you know what? That was fine. I introduced myself to the principal as his babysitter, and that was okay. I don't push it on them, but I don't try to draw lines. It's we are family, we are one, and I try to work like that with the parents as well. When the parents see that you love their child like they love their child, go into it as a partnership. It's a lot easier working with the parents and helping with the reunification part of it. So Caleb, he knows he gets brothers, and yeah, sometimes they're annoying. I tell him, Caleb, you annoy them too. So we deal with it like any family.
And of course, the thing that's different though from any other family is it's also you have these foster children, but you don't presumably have them forever. So it's like
that
you have
correct.
Someone. So for instance, he has a little brother, but not forever.
Yes, and that can be hard at times, especially when we have a child. Our last placements, we received them both at 6 months, about a month apart, and they were with us a year and a half. Well, it was very tough to those little guys to go. And there are tears. We talk about it. You know, we cry. It's okay to cry. I'm sad too. We our last day together. How are we going to do this? Do you want to go to school first and then not see them anymore? Do you want to, you know, come pick you up and then they leave? You know, we try to work it because it is hard. And we do try to keep in contact if the family allows us to. But there are times when there is no more contact when they leave. So that is something that we do deal with, that grief and that pain of that child leaving.
Right. Emily, what do you have to offer on this sensitive topic?
Not a lot. That was very, very well said and very true to how it is. You know, in our home, we've chosen to adopt something that one of our first little girls had kind of indirectly brought in, and it's actually from a Disney movie, we use the concept of ohana. And ohana means family, and family means no one gets left behind or forgotten.
Oh.
And so family is always there, whether they're in our hearts or they're in our home. They are family. So sometimes they are in our home for a while, but That's they are good. Always in our heart. And when you are here, you are family. And that doesn't mean you replace mom or dad or any grandmas or anyone. Right. We don't replace. We just become family. And you don't just become family to the child. You become family to their parents.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And when the parents are open to that as well, we all become family.
Mm-hmm.
I just last night attended preschool graduation with one of my little boys and mom and dad and his younger brother and the new baby, and we are family, and we're all together, and we'll always stay that way, whether they're in our home or not. And I've always told my children, it's no different than I grow up and my brother now lives in this state and my sister lives in this state and my grandparents and my aunt and uncle live in this state. And you will always have brothers and sisters that are in different places, and that's just a little bit different, you know. And I think, you know, a lot of their friends live with mom or with dad or with grandma. And so I think in this day and age, it's not as difficult as it may have been maybe 30 or 40 years ago when you had more traditional families.
Right.
We have very different families all the time in our modern world. And I think that it's a little bit easier for that. There is pain and heartache. It's pain and heartache because they have to decide when every child comes in, how much they're going to open their heart and how willing they are allowed to have their heart break when that child leaves. And I think that for my children, because they are older, like I said, my youngest is 17, my oldest is 28. And for my children over time, I have seen in 5 years, them go from opening their hearts a little bit and being involved with the children a little bit to immediately opening their hearts, because when you love a child and the child moves on, it is painful. But when you love a child, that pain is, I don't want to say it's a happy pain, but there's a melancholy pain where there's joy and there's memories, and you always have that.
Right.
And
it's like a healthy pain.
It's a healthy pain. Mm-hmm. It's very, I've yet to come up with a way to really describe it. But when a child leaves my home, I'm sorry they aren't with me, but I know they've reunified.
Right. Yes.
They've gone back to their mom, their dad.
You played a part in that.
This is great for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I will forever be changed and touched by the time I had. And this last night, my 17-year-old came in, and we've got a brand new little one in our home, and he immediately picked her up and said, "Hey." Mm-hmm. And usually it'll take him a few days to physically pick up a baby or hold the baby. And I said, "We've taken yet another step forward that he can walk in the door and immediately pick this thing." He said, "I think I'm going to like you. You're just the cutest thing. You're going to be my little sister." And and he's talking, you know, right out of the gates. And I'm going, it didn't take 24 hours.
Yay.
And, you know, we had that.
Wow.
And
that's great.
It's an amazing thing for your own children to make them aware of the greater need in life. It makes them forgive.
Hmm.
It makes them accept. It helps them to understand what it's like to be in a tough place and to come alongside people and understand that tough place, allow them to come out of that tough place, to not judge people for choices or decisions and allow them to make changes. And I think that it's helping to raise my children to be better citizens for our world.
That's great.
In the future.
Because
of, yes.
Because of the experiences they have. And so you hate to say it's a positive thing, because I wish we didn't have foster care. You know, I wish it wasn't a need in life. But
right. But if we need it, I mean, how great that it can have even these unintended benefits beyond the help that you've given.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marie, if if someone hearing this conversation thinks this is something I want to explore, perhaps for myself, what should they do?
They should give me a call. My number is 262-638-6595. Or you can go on to our website, bringthemhomeracine.com, if you want a little bit more information about how you can help. I'm willing to go into churches, businesses, board meetings, talk to people about foster care to get more people interested and answer any questions that they have. And, you know, we're on Facebook. You can go look on Facebook. You can see